Fallout Equestria, Heroes by No One, Chapter 26, Zero Point.
We knew the world would not be the same. Few people laughed. Few people cried. Most people were silent. I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty, and to impress him, takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." I suppose we all thought that, one way or another.
Julius Robert Oppenheimer, father of the atomic bomb.
How long can we sit here, huddled in the darkness, dying of radiation and starving for food, before we must rise up? How long can we let the aptly named gangs hoard all the food, the water, the medicine we need to survive? When the balefire erupted over the city, their first thought was to shoo us to the unprotected tunnels while they hide in their towers, drinking rat away like water. They do not share their wealth, or their food, or their medicine, but leave our children to die of sickness and disease. If there was ever a time to rise up and take our city back, it is now.
I had to admit, the speech hit enough emotional aspects that it almost made me sympathize with her. Almost. Not only were there a few inconsistencies, underground was not radiation-proof, but most certainly more radiation-proof than the buildings on the surface. I was also suspicious of the ramp because I knew the pony speaking, one righteous song of Celestia's vision. Unless there was another white pony with a rising sun as a cutie mark. She was standing on a soapbox in a crowded tunnel while followers gathered to listen to her. Not many stayed, I noticed. Most of the crowd just passed in front of her for a moment before moving on.
We have fed Dais and their gang leaders with our caps, our livelihoods, and with our blood. Is this how we should be repaid?
Though, I did have a feeling her following would grow as things got worse. Flair and I moved away from the commotion down a smaller tunnel, but it was too crowded. It seemed all Dais flooded into the tunnels, although Flair said only the top level of tunnels was crowded, and everything below was still empty. Once the mega spell had gone off and the streets were awash with radiation, the gangs of Dais threw out all but the most vital employees and left the rest of the citizens to retreat underground. There were whispers of the riots that took place. How, when some of the citizens had been denied access to the gang-controlled entrances to the tunnels, the entrance I'd used to get underground was actually secret, so most did not look there, instead to the entrances held by the various gangs. They had fought back in short but bloody battles. Rumor was that when fires broke out, Ponytrons came to quell the fighting, but were beaten down and stripped for parts. Of course, the madness hadn't lasted long, as the threat of radiation drove every pony quickly off the streets. Not that the tunnels were the best place to go. I could still hear my pit buck ticking slowly as I walked the tunnels, proof of the ever-present threat. Overnight, Rightaway and Radex had become worth their weight in gold. Surprisingly, the first thing Flair did after rescuing me was feed me two Rightaways. Apparently, by the time he arrived for his dramatic rescue, Serenity was already very ill and getting worse, despite fending off a few scorpions as I was unconscious. But I was doing much better because my larger body type was more resilient to the radiation. Still, it was a testimony how badly Rattaway was going to be needed in the coming days. At least the journey through the scorpion tunnels to the part where ponies actually lived was mostly uneventful. On his way in, Flair had to fight his way through, and since he'd blown up everything in its path, it left us with a mostly safe, and easy to follow, way out. Which was good because my makeshift hind leg was both incredibly painful and very awkward to walk on. Of course, considering the circumstances in which Serenity made the leg, it was basically a work of art. My mind couldn't even really comprehend the work she must have done on my leg to make it even able to be used with the prosthetic. Never mind the fact it was done while in a hostile area, being irradiated and attacked by scorpions. Once she woke up, I was going to buy her as much candy as I could find. "Watch it," some pony growled when I bumped into them, which broke me out of my contemplative stupor. I wasn't sure who had said it, because the tunnel was a mess of ponies, and when I looked back, the pony was gone. The tunnels may have been made for the entire city, but they were only utilizing 1/100th of the tunnel's actual size.
Don't bump into ponies.
Flair looked back at me. Not that he had much of a problem running into ponies. Every pony saw his enclave attire and gave him a wide berth, though this was accompanied by a lot of dirty looks. I have a new leg. Not my fault. I lifted up my makeshift hind leg and looked back at it. It wasn't pretty, but it worked enough to walk, if you consider it awkwardly limping around walking.
At least you lost it for a noble cause, like a true hero,
Flair said as he turned his head back forward. I groaned at the word and tried to put it out of my mind. The last thing I needed was more overthinking about what it meant to be a hero.
That's only partially sarcasm. Those rad scorpions were a menace, have been for a year. With so many ponies migrating into the safety of the tunnels, you probably saved a lot of lives by removing the source. I had a friend who tried the same thing a long time ago.
His voice was strange, almost sad, but it was hard to tell through the voice filter.
He never did come back.
Flair stopped to lower his head for a second before suddenly walking again at an increased pace that I could hardly keep up with. That is to say, I couldn't keep up with him at all, especially not with the other ponies walking in the other direction and blocking him from view. I thought I was able to see him far ahead of me in the crowded corridor until I found myself in a large room that was apparently set up as a miniature market, and he was completely gone. With Serenity. Normally, the filly would be riding on my back, but after the fighting, I was too worried about falling and dropping her, so I had let him carry her. Lovely. With a grunt of annoyance and pain, even with Med-X my body stung, I tried to stand up taller and stretch my neck out to see better. It didn't really work, and made me look something like a fool, which I found appropriate. With that attempt at failure, I tried to push my way through the crowd. Hopefully, he would notice I was gone and listen for yells of, "Watch where you're going," and find me again. Normally, I could navigate the tunnels myself, but it looked different filled with ponies. As I was looking over at one of the many stands set up, it was actually selling right away and guarded by 5 fully armored and armed earth ponies, I noticed something bump into me. At first, I thought it was just another pony attracted to my clumsiness until they said something other than "excuse you" or "watch it."
Excuse me, are you a Hazai?
The words made my heart jump for a second, because I was a Hazai, and apparently Mr. House, my employer, had kicked ponies out of his hotel to fend for themselves, as he hogged right away for himself. Well, he was a ghoul, so he would have been hogging it for his employees, though the effect was the same. I managed to turn slightly to the speaker, a diminutive purple mare with a short cropped yellow mane.
If you are, she started, looking nervous. I was just wondering, you see, my daughter's real sick, and I don't have any right away, and I heard the gangs that they had a lot. If you could spare some.
She gulped and looked at the ground.
Of course she's not a Hazai, stupid mare, an older mare said from the crowd nearby. No Hazai'd have that shabby of a leg.
The older mare waved in the direction of my new hind leg. With a huff, she vanished into the crowd, her grumpiness apparently spent.
Oh, right.
The purple mare nodded her head in realization.
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bother you. Please forgive me.
She gulped nervously and took a step back.
It's just my daughter and I need to go. I'm sorry for bothering you.
She quickly backed up, running rump first into a confused stallion. This led to more apologizing and running off into the crowd, where she no doubt ran into and apologized at more confused strangers. I watched her leave for a few seconds before she was lost in the sea of ponies, then let out a sigh. Maybe I could convince Mr. House to use some of his rations to help the ponies down here. Radiation was seeping in, and it was only a matter of time before ponies started dying. And when that happened, they'd get even more desperate.
Hyatt.
Flair was beside me so suddenly that I nearly jumped.
You're really easy to find in the crowd, you know that? In battle, you must be the equivalent of shooting the broadside of a barn.
That explained how I kept getting shot. In the face. Of course, if I was a barn, it'd have to be a high-durability barn made by StableTech or something. Sorry. I looked over him to find his rather creepy bug eyes staring at me. You started walking too fast.
Sorry. Forgot about your peg leg.
He snorted.
Now let's get a move on before some pony recognizes you and starts to wonder if Isaiah I keep right away in their blood.
Ponies would have a harder time recognizing me if he didn't say stuff like that out loud. So, I didn't bother answering him and tried to pretend I didn't know him. Of course, this was a mite difficult as I was still following him through the throngs of tired and sick ponies. I knew Daes had a lot of ponies in it, but it was very different seeing them all packed together. Over on the wall of the tunnel we were walking down, I noticed someone had painted the words, "We are dying" and "We don't have to" in red paint, followed by the word "unite" in green below it. It was an eerie green, that last word, almost sickly. More than anything, though, it reminded me of the jade explosion that erupted over the city. I could still see it when I closed my eyes, still feel the shockwave thudding against my chest. The color, I was sure, was no accident. Not that it was the only thing written on the walls. It was simply the brightest and most coherent. It seemed the public airing of grievances had been taken to the walls of the tunnels, perhaps as a way to pass the time, or maybe because they were afraid of saying certain things out loud for fear of who might be listening. Or maybe I was just thinking way too much about graffiti. It wasn't long before we pushed past the thickest concentration of ponies and managed our way to what was apparently the exit. It wasn't the one I was used to, and it was heavily guarded by a trio of battle saddle-wearing ponies. Of course, I still had that flamethrower, so I could have wiped the floor with them if I wanted.
"Stop right there," one of the three said. "What's your business on the surface? I mean, other than the fact you're clearly retarded and want to die."
Flair took a step towards the mare and used a hoof to point at his black enclave armor. He replied dryly,
"Take a wild guess."
"Fashion parade?"
was the guard mayor's answer.
"Enclave, I have business with my commander."
"Oh yes, how could I forget what you tossers look like? Pardon me."
She seemed agitated, to put it lightly.
"Celestia forbid I deny you anything. You'd shoot me down with one of your laser guns or something."
She looked over at me.
"What's the big bitch for? Target practice?"
"Yes,"
Flair replied.
"Good enough."
She turned her head to the guard closest to the door.
"Let them through."
She looked back at us.
"Don't blame me if you stay up too long and come back all ghoulified."
"What was that about?" I asked Flair as we went through the door into the dark corridor beyond. On the other side of the hallway, I could see a set of stairs and light peeking through. I tried to ignore the fact my pit buck seemed to tick faster the closer we got to the door. "That enclave laser gun thing," I clarified.
"Oh, that."
He kept walking, but I saw his head lowered.
"Well, I've mentioned that things been changing rapidly."
Yes, he had mentioned that.
"Well, ever since that whole sunshine and rainbows thing, ponies got all excited about the enclave. Not the Daes enclave, but the one that's still in the sky. Started something of a civil war."
"I assume this is going somewhere," I said as we started up the stairs, my pit buck clicking faster by the second.
"Yes, yes, just listen. So, there was a civil war,"
Flair explained as he opened the door to reveal a small dirty room with only one exit on the far side.
"The enclave used clouds to grow food, you know, and with only so much saved up and less farmable land, there were food riots and factions breaking off and other lovely things like that. Apparently, the pony who cleared the skies thought it was better that ponies on the ground could see the sun than it was for a pegasi to eat."
"Right," I said. I wasn't really smart enough to question that logic, but it did seem a little bit strange.
"High General Steelwing, the current ruler of the Enclave Remnants, the ponies that I work for."
I was a little bit insulted he felt he needed to remind me of that.
"Has been in touch with one of these factions for a while."
Flair walked over to the door on the other side of the room and pushed it open.
"Now we're aligned with them, and we've acquired, well, see for yourself."
He seemed to be looking at something off in the distance, and when I stepped out to see what it was he was looking at, I gasped.
"Welcome to Daes."
Off in the distance, floating over the apartment structure to the southwest was, well, it was something. It was a large structure that looked like a cross between a boat and a thundercloud, only many times the size of a vertibuck and loaded with what had to be giant cannons. Flying around it were many black armored pegasi illuminated by the setting sun, as well as more vertibucks than the remnants had before, and a few other flying machines I didn't really understand.
That is a raptor nacreous. It was partially knocked to the ground when the rain booms that cleared the sky went off, but it was flying low and that damage was able to be repaired.
He sounded a little bit proud of the giant thing. It scared me, though. If the remnants had completely dominated the skies about Dias before, now their hold was unshakable. How long would it take for them to decide just to take the city, and when that happened, who could possibly stop them? Not that there was much of a city left to conquer. As I stepped onto the Dias streets, I heard nothing. There were no sounds of ponies talking or laughing amongst each other. There was not even any of the ever-present music drifting from the casinos onto the street. All there was to hear was the harsh wind whipping through the tall buildings and the loud clicking of my pitbuck. There were so few lights. Normally there would have been bright lights shining from every window and sign, great beacons that proudly proclaimed that this wasn't a mere wasteland settlement. It was a city like those of old, proud of its accomplishments and more than willing to shove them in your face. Now it seemed dead, or deader. Without the noise and lights, I could really get a good look at the city. Its tall buildings were in disrepair, many close to falling over, and even the well-maintained ones looked skeletal. The paved road was cracked and shattered in places in ways I hadn't noticed before, and the great neon signs seemed cracked and half-hanging on. Overall, it was lonely. A great expanse of buildings and roads and walkways, now all empty but for us. Well, there were some lights peeking out from the four major casinos, but they seemed paltry compared to what it had been. Between the raptor flying menacingly overhead and the deserted streets, I barely felt like I knew the city at all. Everything was changing too quickly for me to keep up, and it was my fault. Well, not really. It was true that I had failed to stop what had happened, and that my failure was impressive, but I hadn't caused it, had I? Dragon Slayer and whoever he was working for had done it. Maybe I failed to stop him, but it was still his plans, his hooves. This wasn't another Kharkov where I was the pony who set the town on fire. I had only failed to stop him. This was his doing, not mine. All of this. And if I ever met him again, I'd tear off his leg and beat him with it. When I met him again. I was positive that once I told Mr. House what I had learned, he'd fit me up with a new leg and send me out after him. It was a long time coming, and that bastard deserved it.
Silva.
Flare flew a few feet ahead of me.
Hurry up. You're unprotected like that, and so is Serenity.
That was all I needed to get me going at a really quick pace. Despite the fact she was still wearing that black fireproof sheet, though she'd taken off the gas mask, she wasn't protected much from radiation. How will the BS, the black salamander? Flare probably didn't know my internal shorthand version of the hotel's name. How will it be, safe?
Well,
Flare said as he quickened his pace.
Ever hear of a spell in a box?
What? My knowledge of magic was, paltry at best. The most I knew was that when my shoulder burned, magic was around. Is it like, when you enchant a box?
Sort of,
he said as we neared the hotel.
Nah, I'm not a unicorn, so I'm no expert on magical what's-its, but from my understanding, it's a spell you put into a box that goes off either when triggered or when certain conditions are met. Really advanced stuff, or so I'm told. The point is that after the whole apocalypse thing, Mr. House put a lot of work into thinking about how to use a box of spell to help if something like that were to happen again.
Mr. House is an earth pony, I said. Given he was an earth pony, all the thoughts in the world wouldn't cast a spell.
Doesn't mean he's dumb. He happened to know quite a few unicorns, and some of them turned all ghoulified with him, blah, blah, blah. He used anti-radiation magic, which exists, but in too small an era to normally be useful. Put it into a box, put the box into the wall of his hotel, and bam, it sucks up radiation before it gets in. Takes a lot of them out here, and he sold the idea to the other hotels. It's how he got a lot of his post-war wealth, I think. I may be making some of this up, but generally that's how it works.
If there's a spell that cleans radiation, why is it still around? I had to ask, because that part made no sense to me at all.
There's less than there was, Anyway, it takes a lot of energy to clear a small space, and it seeps in from infected areas eventually. The spell of boxes won't last for more than a few weeks at most.
Then every pony above would have to retreat too. At least it was a little bit of hope. With my pit buck still ticking, I decided I had spent far too much time in deadly radiation and increased my hobbling speed to the BS's door. Flair reached it first and was already knocking by the time I walked up to it.
"Open up,"
he said loudly.
"I said O-P-E-N."
There was a long, worrying pause when there was no answer from beyond the door, but eventually a voice spoke up over the intercom beside the entrance.
"Who is it?"
"It's Flair, Captain Flair of the Enclave Remnants. I'm under orders to bring back one of your Hyzai who got caught outside after the blast,"
Flair said through the door.
"So you really should open. We have a civilian out here without protection."
"Designation?"
the voice replied, irritatingly calm.
"Star Mayor," I yelled through the door. "My designation is Star Mayor."
There was an even longer pause before the voice spoke up again.
"Ah, you. Mr. Half's been waiting for you."
Well, that sounded ominous.
"One second. Disengaging emergency door."
There was a loud clangor from the other side of the wooden door for what seemed like hours, though probably only a minute, before the door finally opened.
"Well, come in,"
the voice said. I shoved Flair through the door and followed quickly, and before the door could even fully close behind me, something suddenly hugged me around the neck.
"Star Mayor!"
What?
I took a step back, dragging along the mayor who hugged me. "Oh," I said, as I realized it was a strangely perky and affectionate tight lips.
"Ha! And here I was betting you were dead. Serves me right. I made the same bet last time you vanished off the face of the wasteland, you know."
She winked at me.
"You'll simply have to share your stories over a drink."
That was not going to happen.
"But you have things to do first, no doubt. I'm simply positive Mr. House will want to see you, because he told me he wanted to see you. I'm intuitive like that."
She chuckled to herself and took a few steps back.
"So, welcome back to the Black Salamander."
She waved a hoof at the casino floor, and to my surprise, it was different. The slot machines were pushed together with poker tables on top to make makeshift shacks, and the pit in the center of the floor was filled with supplies of all sorts. And ponies. The entire place was completely crowded with ponies, even more than when all the NCA ponies were getting cybernetics.
"I thought gang leaders didn't take in any city ponies," I said.
That's what I'd heard in the tunnels, anyway.
"Oh, Mr. House didn't."
Tightlip seemed amused by my mistake.
"Most of these ponies worked for Mr. House, or families of ponies who did. He kept most of his employees in rooms upstairs, but when the bomb went off, he moved them down here. That way the spells that keep the place radiation-free are more contained and will last longer. The first few floors of hospital and research are protected too, but anything above isn't. Mr. House is still in his room because ghouls love that radiation stuff."
That all actually made a lot of sense, and while Tight Lips said all these ponies worked for Mr. House, I wasn't sure. Maybe Mr. House had a heart under that decomposing flesh after all.
"Doctor," I said, my mind snapping back. "Serenity, my daughter."
Tight Lips looked over at Flair and over the sleeping filly with an almost grim look, as grim as Tight Lips ever looked.
"You sure have her dialed up, but that won't protect her against radiation. I'll get her into a cleansing right away."
She gave out a sharp whistle, and a pony came running up from somewhere in the casino shantytown. He quickly helped Serenity off Flair's back and carried her off to the doctor's floor. I didn't look away from my filly until she passed out of view from between a set of double doors.
"She'll be fine,"
Flair said before starting to take off his helmet and shaking out his mussed-up mane. He gently put a hoof on my back. "She's a tough filly. Always has been."
"I know," I said quietly.
She was a tough filly because I had dragged her through the mud. Even though she wanted to come with me, I still wish she didn't have to be so tough.
"I know,"
I repeated to myself to make sure I believed it before turning back to Tight Lips.
"Thanks."
"Not a problem. We're colleagues, compadres, sisters, in a way."
She perked up.
"Speaking of friends, you're super lucky. I ever tell you that?"
"No, and probably for a reason."
"Because your friend, Pearls, or whatever, she got here just in the nick of time to be allowed to stay, and she's been a great help. You sure know how to pick 'em."
She winked at me, and it took me a second to get what she was implying.
She's just,
I fought the blush away and just shook my head.
"Oh, good, because I was thinking of picking me off some of that."
She paused to laugh.
"Just kidding. I'm straight. She'll want to see you, though. But you have things to do first, and fraternizing will have to wait. Things like seeing Mr. House about that ugly-ass leg of yours. That simply won't do. So off you go." She shoved me lightly. I'll even let you bring that cute buck friend of yours, even if he is a filthy enclave vulture.
She turned to him.
No offense.
Even Flair seemed a bit confused. None taken? She nodded at this and trotted off towards one of the security ponies guarding the door.
She's weird, Flair said when she was out of earshot.
Yep, I said inside and looked towards the elevator. Let's go see what Mr. House wants. Probably for me to run off into another suicide mission or lose more body parts. I was starting to wonder if I was the only agent he had, because it was either that or I was the most expendable. Without waiting for Flair to reply, I started off on a slow walk towards the elevator and did my best to ignore the stares of ponies milling around. It was clear as I navigated the mess of ponies that these were Mr. House's ponies, because nearly all of them had some sort of noticeable implant or another, and all were staring at my ugly back leg in mild disgust. It infuriated me. Sure, they couldn't know that it was built by a filly in a hostile tunnel after saving me from bleeding out, but it didn't mean they had the right to judge my daughter's work. It was better than anything any of them could have done at that age, or ever. Shaming a mob was not on my to-do list, however, so I just kept walking until I reached the elevator. Flair hit the button for Mr. House's floor, and the doors finally closed behind me. I let out a sigh.
She did a great job, Flair said as he put his helmet back on.
Your leg, and Serenity, that is.
He apparently saw the looks, too.
Considering she's a filly, she should get a damn medal.
What she should get was a mother who didn't drag her into situations like that. Or at least one with a brain. Instead, she had me.
Hey!
Flair tilted his masked head and stared at my collar. What? I looked down at myself and wasn't sure what he was looking at. I was still wearing the modified black fireproof barding that was made for me. He seemed to be staring at the collar pockets built in for easy access. Having no magic sucked sometimes. But there wasn't much in them. Emergency ammo, emergency grenade, spark pulse emitter, medex, and note. Wait.
Was that there before?
Flair pointed at the same note I saw. Apparently, he was very perceptive. No. I carefully pulled it out of my pocket and laid it on the ground to read. Room 829. What? How the heck did that note even get in there?
That's your room.
It was a good thing he said that, because I wouldn't have noticed. Really, I forgot what number it was. Maybe the note was something I put in my pocket to remind me what my room number was. It didn't look like Serenity's writing, though, and if it were mine, it would be completely legible, so I doubted that. Might as well check it out, I said, and hit the number 8 button on the elevator pad. It's on the way.
And a little extra radiation never hurt any pony.
You know what I never got enough of? Sarcasm. That reminds me, I said as our ride rocked to a stop on the 8th floor. Do you know what happened to my BEL? I walked into the hall and heard my pit buck ticking warily at me. It was in my room before.
What? Oh.
Flair followed after me, clanking in his heavy armor.
Starscream came in to check on you, saw it lying around, lectured me, and took it into private storage. Apparently having such a weapon lying around was just asking for trouble.
Well, fuck him too.
I didn't touch it at all, but damn, it was tempting.
I wouldn't trust you with it, I said as we walked into the hall. Immediately I could hear my pit buck starting to click slowly. Not that I trust myself with it either. Really, there should be a law barring me from getting close to mega spells. Or explosions.
Why not? I carry enough ordnance with me to double the size of a BEL launcher explosion, and you haven't said anything about that.
I was a bit suspicious of that number, but having never seen a BEL explosion, I really couldn't doubt it. More likely than not, he was just trying to trick me into letting him use it. Maybe. It sort of worked, his argument, that is. On one hoof, I didn't trust a drug addict with a weapon like that, but on the other, having that sort of power on my side could be crucial. I just wasn't sure the risk was worth the potential reward. Maybe if we had a super dangerous job fighting a dragon or something. One thing at a time, I said. I really needed a list of things I needed to get done. Step 1, see what's waiting for me in my room. Step 2, talk to Mr. House and get a bullshit job and some new body parts. Step 3, find out who is behind the attack in the train station. Step 4, kill them a lot. Step 5, take a long nap. Yeah, that would do.
I guess at some point I should add, help Mr. House take over Dyes, but I wasn't really sure I wanted to do that anymore. Still, the last helped me put my brain into order, so on to step one. I opened the door to my old room, and there was nothing in there. Well, there was stuff in there, a few empty beer bottles I hadn't gotten around to cleaning up, and a bed I'd left unmade, a few odds and ends, but nothing out of order. "Huh," I said. "I guess it was just something someone wrote down for me so I could remember where my room was." With a sigh, I walked in. I guess I could pick up some of the things I'd left now that I was here.
"Ooh, dramatic."
Flair had a way with words. He flew past me and looked out the window on the far side of the room.
"It's a nice view, you know."
I didn't know. I tended to avoid the window and just shut the curtain. I didn't like thinking about how high up it was.
"It's just empty down there. You know, I lived in this city all my life. I've seen the city grow and shape. I've been witness to gang wars and threats from the outside. One year, there was this drought that nearly brought the city to its knees. But I've never seen it so empty before, so quiet."
He paused and turned away from the window.
"I don't think I like it."
"Me either." Against my better judgment, I walked over to the window and looked out from it. It was a good view, wasn't it? Everything down below looked so small, and I could see so much. Was this what Pegasi saw every time they flew? I could almost see the allure. That was until my stomach twisted, and for a second I felt like I was falling again. I had to step back quickly and take a deep breath to calm myself down. I really wanted to use one of my Med-Xs, but I had to ration them. It wasn't that I was lacking for them, but with Dice dying, I wasn't sure where I could get more.
"If you are afraid of heights, it would be advisable not to stand next to someplace high," a familiar voice said from behind me.
When I turned, I saw nothing. But soon that nothing faded, and Platinum Hayes stood there with a smile on her face. I had known something was in the room from the burning sensation, though I wasn't positive it was her.
"We are sorry. Did we surprise you? That was not our intention."
"Oh, hey, Hayes."
Flair waved a wing at her, which was strangely familiar.
"Of course not," I said softly and walked over to her.
I had intended to nuzzle the beautiful alicorn, as I had before, but something was different. I couldn't reach, and for some reason my pit buck was clicking more.
"Oh," she said quickly and backed up. It would be best if you do not get too close."
"What? Are you taller?" With her further backed up, I could see she was taller, by a fair bit, too. So I was fairly lost as to what the heck was going on.
Sorry, Tightlips delivered the message to you then, right?"
"Message? Oh, the note in my pocket, and Tightlips giving me a hug. Damn, she was good at that. Don't know why she made it so secret."
"She said that she had to let young love bloom, but couldn't risk House finding out."
That was interesting, but it didn't explain the size difference.
"We are sorry about our size. My kind reacts this way to high concentrations of radiation. It is one of the reasons why Mother believed we would be the ideal race to rebuild Equestria."
That was different. "I'm just glad you're okay, but, why are you here?" I asked. The alicorn looked over at Flair with a bit of confusion.
"Did you not inform her of the situation? We thought we had requested such."
"Sorry, Hayes," Flair said half-heartedly. "There was a lot to tell her. I guess I forgot."
The alicorn cast a sharp glare at Flair that, along with her increased size, made her almost terrifying. But it faded quickly into a resigned smile.
"Okay."
She turned back to me.
"We... Not long after the explosion, as crowds began storming into the tunnels, a group approached the orphanage. Celestia's vision, they came back with what could only be described as a mob. Somehow they knew where we were hidden and attempted to take the children back by force."
"What?" I felt myself panicking at the thought, but her calmness led me to believe that it wasn't as bad as it could be.
"It is. Well, we cannot lie, we were worried. Our shield was fading, and rounding up the foals in a panic was difficult for Diamond Sky and the others. We were convinced we would have to sacrifice ourselves to protect them."
Part of me wanted to ask why she didn't just kill them back, but I already knew the answer.
"Your friend, Flair, he was able to save us. He used a flashbang to blind the crowd, then engineered a tunnel collapse. It did not stop the mob, but it slowed them down enough for Diamond Sky to teleport the fools to safety.
Spitshine too, right? I asked. I had to make sure. And, to where?
Yes, the Alicorn nodded. Of course, the foal. Was that her name? We did not have a chance to question her, given the circumstances.
She looked to Flair for confirmation on that and didn't continue until he nodded.
As for where they were taken, we are not allowed to disclose that information, but it is a safe place, far away. We had set it up first in the event of an emergency, though we can say we did not expect to need to use it so soon. We are to wait here until the time is right to return.
She seemed upset by that.
We hope that the children are okay. We will miss them.
What will you do until then? I asked, who knew how long it would take for the radiation to fade.
We do not know. We are unsure of what to do with free time. We imagine we can help you, but we can't think that our particular help would be of much use.
Right, the pacifist thing. I'd always appreciate your help. I gave her my best smile, which was just big enough that I looked sincere, but not enough to stretch my facial scars that much. I guess you can stay in my room for now. I won't be getting much use out of it.
She gave a heavy sigh and nodded. Thank you.
She seemed to stare at the floor with a sad look on her face. I'm sure you'll see the foal soon enough. I did my best to sound reassuring, but really, I didn't know for sure. She looked up from the floor to stare at me with her strange yellow eyes. She looked like she was about to say something, but stopped herself and scrunched up her muzzle in confusion.
Where is your foal? We would very much like to see her.
She frowned for a second and looked over at my back where Serenity often sat, then gasped,
Your leg!
Oh, I said. I felt like an idiot for not telling her. It's a long story. By the time I told her what happened, I realized that either the story really wasn't that long or that I sucked at details, possibly both. Either way, I ended with telling her that Serenity was being looked at by doctors, probably for radiation sickness that they could easily cure. At least I hoped.
I'm sorry.
She gave a heavy sigh.
We wish we could have assisted you at the time, but we are curious. You stated that your leg was cut off, but where did you acquire that replacement?
Somehow, in my short storytelling, I completely forgot the most important part. Serenity made it, or rather modified it from the old one she built, after saving my life. I think she killed a few bugs, too. I gave a long pause to think about that. She's pretty amazing, isn't she? I said. How could a filly like that not have her cutie mark yet?
Yes, she is.
Platinum Hayes smiled at me and moved forward and kissed me on the cheek before quickly retreating to her spot across the room again.
We are sorry for taking time away from your day. We are certain you have things to do. We will remain here for now, but we may go down to check on Serenity for you. We worry about her.
My cheeks started to burn up at the kiss, or maybe the radiation she was emitting. But I had more important things to worry about. I closed my eyes and nodded. Yeah, need to see Mr. House. Thanks for caring. I'm going to find out who did this, the radiation. I'll find out why and stop them. Someone had to, and I was the only one with any clue at all. And then the orphanage could move back. That'll be great, right? I waited until she nodded before turning and left the room. No part of me really wanted to leave Platinum Hayes, but I had a job to do and blah, blah, blah. I was hired gun, so off I went to my employer. Some things never change.
It's not right.
Were the words we heard Mr. House speak to himself as we closed in on his room. As a ghoul, radiation actually healed him, so he never moved from his old room, or even bothered to close his door, it seemed.
It's not the same.
Flair and I entered his room to find him staring at one of the screens on his giant computer terminal.
Do you know, he said to us as we entered the room, that I stood in this exact same place when it happened?
In this context, it didn't need to be explained.
My aides were telling me I should leave, yelling at me about a vertibuck and a stable and how we should go.
Reports were flooding in, they said. Manhattan, Flank Yard, Clydesdale, Cantalot, Huffington, even Trotanto, all gone. Yet, they stood. For the longest time, stood still, halfway between panic and eerie calm. I thought perhaps we'd dodge the bullet, that we would survive.
He looked out his window, which I now realized was shattered.
Everything was fire. Thousands died in the flash, and I was thrown back. When I woke, my skin was peeling, and the world was dead. I could feel the radiation, feel it keeping me alive. At the time, it was strange, but now it's normal.
He turned back to look at me with glowing green eyes.
Something is wrong. The radiation, it's not enough. In 250 years, I've made a lot of memories, but that one, those early moments, I'll never forget.
So maybe the combination of all the mega spells going off made it feel different than the one went off this time?
Flair said.
Maybe, but no. It's still too weak. If whatever went off was a mega spell, it was a weak one. Bigger than a barefire egg, but it wasn't the same as the ones I've seen.
He stopped and looked directly at me. His eyes reminded me of how the Laughing Stallion looked right before he exploded.
You were there. You need to tell me. Is it true? The rumors? That the Minotaurs rigged a mega spell to that freak who fought the Batman?
He seemed tired and frustrated, though I admit I wasn't the best at reading faces, especially ghoul faces.
Maybe, was my reply. Sort of. Do you remember what I told you of the facility in Simple Heart? He nodded slowly. It was like that. He was the mega spell. It was like Simple Heart, only it worked. Then I added quickly, I don't think it was the Minotaurs, though. They seemed confused and denied it.
And yet, he added sharply, I'm sure you have no theories of your own.
He turned back to his computer.
But I believe you. This was not Minotaur work. If only for that, the megaspell technology would be beyond them. Even during the Great War, they borrowed weapons from the zebras and...
He tapped something at his computer.
Those files you sent me indicated that the Pony megaspell research data was sent to Trotanto, well beyond Minotaur reach even now.
Where? I moved slightly closer so I could see he had a map on his terminal.
Oh.
His voice broke from cocky to confused for a split second.
Aglow. That's the name now. I always forget.
He quickly composed himself.
It was the capital of Caledonia before the war, and now it's the largest city in the NCA.
If I remember correctly, it was also the city Serenity came from before she was with the Watchers in Dyce.
I'm not sure where in Aglow, but it hardly matters. Never has a single Minotaur set foot into that city, every pony agrees, and while it doesn't completely rule them out, it's enough to shine doubt. Thank you for giving me this information, Hyde, but now we need to get to another matter.
He closed what he was looking at in the terminal.
Where were you? My only operative close to the scene vanished for a day and a half. Do you have any idea the disadvantage it put me in?
I really should have thought of a decent lie before Huff, so I just blurted out the first thing that came to mind. I was taken prisoner by the Minotaurs. They thought I had something to do with the explosion, but didn't believe me when I denied it. I managed to escape, but I turned around slowly and showed off my new amputation, not unscathed. Mr. House visibly grimaced at the leg, but then stopped. He leaned in and inspected the leg curiously.
Isn't this the same one your filly built?
I was a bit amazed at his memory, considering.
Yes, I can see it. She modified it to work as a hind leg. That's impressive.
Yeah, she built it after stopping my blood loss, and while fighting rad scorpions, and there was the radiation, I said slowly, as if not really believing it myself.
I see.
He turned away.
We'll need to get you a better one, and once this radiation thing is over, I'd like to set your filly up in an apprenticeship position.
Wait, what?
If she's this skilled so young, I want her trained right, and I want her working for me.
I'm sure she'd be ecstatic. To put it lightly, I couldn't wait to tell her. But, just all of a sudden?
I wasn't aware how talented she was. Does she have her cutie mark yet?
I shook my head, which prompted him to continue.
Good. Maybe she'll get a cybernetic cutie mark if we nurture her gift. I've never seen a pony with that as a special talent. It'd be amazing.
If he said so. I didn't really get the importance of cutie marks anyway. I mean, my special talent was being dumb as a rock or something.
Okay, I said and shuffled awkwardly. We'll still need to get you a new leg, and there are a few things I need to get done concerning the documents you brought me the other day, but those can wait until you're fitted with a new leg. I won't bother asking you what model you want. I'm sure you won't understand.
He looked at my foreleg for a second and hummed.
We really should add a sword to that. You fight hoof to hoof, right?
I nodded.
Right. I'll have my technicians add a blade.
Apparently, I didn't get a choice.
Okay, I said, and Flair just snickered at me. I'll send a message unless you have something better to do.
His tone suggested that I didn't have anything better to do. He turned back to give Flair a strange look.
I suggest going down there soon. I need you fixed up as soon as possible. These are precarious times. Dice is changing, whether we like it or not, and the winner will be the one who acts first.
He let out a sigh and looked out the window. Only this time he looked up at the raptor looming over the entire city.
What are you waiting for? He snapped when he noticed me pause. Go.
Flair and I shared a look when we turned to leave his room, but neither of us said anything. There was nothing left to be said. I had my orders, and I'm sure Flair had his. So all we could do was our jobs. As we walked together towards the elevator, I brought up the courage to ask Flair a question. If, there was ever a time if the Enclave told you to kill me, would you? Flair snorted through his iron mask and said,
Who's to say they haven't already?
Was that supposed to be a joke? I really didn't know, and I suppose I didn't want to know because I never asked. Though I'm not sure why the Enclave would even want me dead. I also wasn't sure why some pony would think detonating a mega spell around Dais would be a good idea either, so clearly we couldn't go by my understanding of how the world works. I just had to be confident that Flair would never actually try to kill me, and if, Celeste forbid, he did try, that I could stop him and kick some sense into him. For all that I like to complain about the Pegasus, I'd rather see him alive than dead. It was then, when we were walking into the elevator, and I was fully confident that Flair wouldn't try to kill me, that a little voice in the back of my head asks, What if you were ordered to kill him? Then I would kill him. I turned my head to look over at the armor-clad Pegasus. He was flapping his wings impatiently and tapping his hooves against the floor with his head down. He looked up suddenly and towards the digital sign above the door that said what floor we were on. I could hear a subtle sigh emitting from his mask as he looked back at the floor. Actually, I don't think I would kill Flair. Instead, I would simply quit the job and refuse to accept it. My personal code, or whatever you wanted to call it, forbade me from breaking a job I agreed to, so all I would have to do is not agree. The way I saw it was that any boss that wanted me to kill Flair wasn't some pony worth working for.
There's smoke coming from your ears.
Flair said, breaking the silence quite suddenly. I was about to ask what he meant, but he added,
You had that look on your face like you're thinking hard, or trying to take a shit.
Just because I resolved never to kill the Pegasus didn't mean he didn't deserve a smack from time to time. So, I reached out and kicked one of his forelegs out from under him. He apparently wasn't expecting it because he started to fall. Unfortunately, he managed to catch himself with a wing and push himself back to a standing position. But I think I got my point across. Eventually, we reached the medical floor, and just like Mr. House had said, the doctors were waiting for us. Or rather, they were waiting for me, because they chased Flair away as soon as we entered. Apparently, they thought he was a distraction or something with that heavy armor clanking around. It was the same process as the last time I got cybernetic work done. I was taken into a small white room, stripped down, and placed on a soft bed. They put a mask over my face and made me count down from 5. Marigold asked me hurriedly,
What are you planning?
as I stormed out of her house with blood still on my hooves. Despite saving her from the raiders that were invading Marefort, she was surprisingly unhelpful. She kept babbling about the Crimson Hoof and Smooth Tongue and such things, but she didn't understand. None of that mattered. Wildfire and Foundation were still alive, so I would have to save them. What else could I do? Now my guard, right? I stopped near the ramp to a lower level. To an outsider, Marefort would seem like a mess, but if you lived here long enough, you got a feel for its oddities.
Yes?
Marigold would know. She was always my boss, even if she was a bit of a coward. And I have to protect them, all of them. Wildfire and Foundation in particular. It's my job, right? So that's what I'm going to do. I turned back to look at her. She was a pitiful sight, with her eyes bloodshot red and her golden mane a frizzled mess. You're going to help until we can rescue the others. First, I need to know more. She seemed confused as she tried to dry her eyes. How many? Where did they take the ponies? Any escaped? I doubted she knew anything, and I wasn't sure what I'd do with the information once I got it, but it seemed the important sort of thing to have.
I'm not sure. I saw a lot. 2 dozen, maybe more.
Okay, that was a lot.
We can't fight that many.
I can. Though I wasn't sure of my words. I had never really been in an actual fight to the death before that night. So far, I was doing good, though, and I was strong. I would need help for sure, but I was confident. Did you see where they took the others?
I didn't really. I just saw them from my window, and I heard them outside my door. Some ponies might not have been grabbed yet.
She was right, I realized then. I could still hear a few cries from below, ponies being corralled, no doubt. There might be time to save the others, though.
Silver!
Marigold was pointing, and my eyes snapped to the side. In the gloom, I could see a unicorn with a rifle leading another by a length of chain.
The fuck are you two doing? The stallion snorted, walking closer.
The glow from his horn was enough to illuminate his ugly face. He had some sort of hideous scar that made it look like something had tried to tear his face off and eat it, but that he had hastily sewn it back on.
If you want your fucking kneecaps, I suggest you drop the weapon, freak.
I think he was addressing me.
No.
If he seriously thought that was an option, he must have been as stupid as he was ugly.
Bitch, that wasn't an option. If you come quietly, you won't be hurt. Much. But if you resist, things will go bad.
He gave a sickly smile, as if that would convince me. Not that it was his smile that caught my attention. Rather, my eyes were drawn to the faint glowing to my side. Didn't look at what I saw, save for a parting glance, because I knew he'd see me. He had floated his rifle off to the side of the walkway we were on, to bring it around on me, unseen. Except I did see, and that gave me the advantage.
Okay,
I said through the rifle in my mouth.
Okay.
I tried my best to make my voice deflate. It had to convince him, or I was as good as dead. I leaned down in an apparent attempt to drop the rifle to the ground. At the last second, I bucked. My hind leg slammed into the floating rifle just as a stallion pulled the trigger. The bullet flew wide and rang against the metal walkway, and thankfully not into me. As he desperately positioned his wobbling gun for another shot, I pulled the trigger of my gun. Unlike him, I hit my target and his knee shattered in bits of bone and gore. Instantly, his magic faded from his horn and he collapsed. Marigold was sobbing in shock as I walked over to the whimpering stallion and finished him off.
Marigold, please!
I had to hope the rest of the raiders would think the shot was from them executing an unruly citizen. The sobbing might help the effect, but it was still hard to move around unseen like that. Marigold reluctantly stopped at my command, so I was free to speak to the pony the stallion had chained.
Now, are you all right?
I recognized the mare right away as Starbell. She was always a fiery little thing, so seeing her tied up was wrong. She gave me a small confident nod and spat in the direction of the corpse.
Good. Marigold, would you search the body for any keys?
If he did have some, they might just work on any other captive we found. Marigold was most unhelpful and refused to touch the dead body, so I had to go searching. Thankfully, I found a key ring on a string around the neck rather quickly. I unlocked the collar around Starbell's neck and fetlocks.
Thanks, Silver.
I should have known they'd never take you, not without a whole arm of backing him up. She gave me a weak smile.
So, what's the plan?
She walked over and grabbed the dead pony's rifle.
We can't take them all on.
We can try. First, we need to free the others.
I slid the string with the keys around my neck.
They caught us by surprise, but if we arm, we can drive them out. That's a plan.
She looked over at Marigold.
Is she okay?
I'm fine, Marigold said. If we could get out of here alive, we should run to Stable Ford, too. Smoothtongue, he can...
Starbell looked confused at this statement.
It's the only way.
Well, I'm not willing to risk our lives by running there and back,
Starbell replied.
We need to fight.
But if we had Smoothtongue and the Crimson Hoof, if they protected us again...
Who's up there?
A voice called from a lower floor. From the distance, I could see a silhouette staring right at us.
Stay there! Ponies escaped up there!
The mare yelled at the top of her lungs, and all of Marefort became aware. I could hear the pattering of hooves starting to run.
Run now, talk later.
I started off in a gallop. I could hear my two comrades behind me, but behind them I could start to hear the rest of the raider gang converging on us. We had to move fast, but luckily I knew Marefort better than any pony, which also meant I knew how to escape.
This way,
I said just loud enough for the two behind me to hear. Instead of turning for one of the ramps down a lower floor, I just kept running until I found the shack I was looking for. It was flush against the wall of the warehouse Marefort was built in, and at the time unoccupied. When Starbell and Marigold entered, I slammed the door behind them. We had to be quick, and they had not to chicken out, or we'd all end up dead.
There's nothing here! We're trapped!
Marigold cried out. It took a lot of reserve not to spack her.
Hair!
I moved quickly across the room to where the bed was. I pushed it out of the way to reveal a hole large enough for a pony to crawl through. On the other side was a small lip on the outside of the structure, barely large enough for some pony to stand on, but it was an escape.
Quickly!
Marigold balked for a second when she realized what she would have to stand on, but her resolve steeled when she looked back at the door and realized her other option. After she was through, Starbell quickly followed. When it was my turn, I crawled out backwards, dragging the bed with me to partially cover up the hole. It wasn't perfect. The raiders might find the hole, but not quickly. The wind whipped violently at us and nearly shook me off the small ledge. When I looked down at the dark abyss below me, though, I wasn't scared, just more secure in my decision. This plan was going to work. It had to.
There!
Not far from the back wall of Marefort was the cliff face that rose above the town and provided a great lookout spot. More importantly was that said cliff had many grooves and ledges large enough to fit ponies. I had snuck out of Marefort many times in the past when I was a child or when I wanted to meet Wildfire at the guardhouse without being noticed.
Jump!
I commanded.
But...
As Marigold tried to protest, Starbell jumped it. It was easy enough for the small mare, and she made it onto the cliff without issue. Marigold gave a short sniff and wiped her eyes before jumping also. She almost didn't make it when part of the rock she landed on crumpled beneath her, but Star caught her and helped her back up. The golden maned mare was shaken, but unhurt.
Okay, I said when I landed beside them. Marigold, that way.
I pointed the opposite direction from where we were facing, where the cliff path snaked upwards.
Leads towards the top. You can go to Stable 42 from there. Me and Star will go rescue the others, okay?
She gave a tentative nod.
Yes, good plan. Silver, thank you.
She suddenly wrapped her legs around me in a tight hug. Now, I was awkward at the best of times, so right then I must have looked ridiculous patting her on the back. Eventually, she let go and started up the cliff on her journey, leaving me and Starbell.
Yeah, what she said, but don't feel bad. I'm just not the huggy sort.
Star smirked at me.
Yeah, me either.
I started to walk down the slope path towards the ground. It was so dark out I could barely see my hooves, but I knew the way well enough that I didn't need to. It was a strange path, and for some reason there were a few spots on it where rusted metal poles jutted out from the ground, blocking me from the edge. Whatever they were for, when I saw them it let me know how close to the ground we were, as otherwise the darkness was so impenetrable I couldn't tell. When we reached the bottom, I took a deep breath of cold night air. Wildfire and Foundation were still out there, and I had to find them, or die trying. I couldn't have been more glad to finish that dream. I knew where it led, and it was not a place I wanted to go ever again. My eyes opened, and I was immediately blinded by bright hospital lights. After a few seconds of whining groggily, I sat up. My new hind leg stung like a bitch, and when I looked at the table beside me, I could see an empty medic syringe. Only one, though, which wasn't nearly enough. Still, I didn't want them to think I was trying to OD, so I would have to wait before I went searching through my bags for another, at least until they inspected me and let me leave. In the meantime, I inspected my new hind leg. It was the same color as my foreleg, but the style was very different. Instead of skeletal, it was full and looked rather like a metal cylinder in shape. All along it were various ports for devices I was unfamiliar with, probably more spying equipment. "Oh, you're awake." My eyes darted to the door where one of my doctors stood. "How do you like it?" "It's a relatively new design, completely quiet, and comes with a shotgun that goes off on impact." That wasn't going to backfire at all. "And your foreleg has been modified with a retractable blade. There was some concern about, accidents." Mr. House didn't trust me with built-in weaponry, and I really didn't blame him. "So I implemented a safety feature. The sword is controlled via your mind, and simply thinking will allow you to use it, but only if a physical safety switch is hit." He walked over and pointed to the small button on the side of my hoof cuff. "Try it out. Cue me accidentally stabbing out my remaining eyeball." Actually, when I hit the switch, nothing happened, and it wasn't until I pointed my hoof away and actually thought about it that the thin blade shot out. It was about a third of a meter long and really thin. "It's a special alloy. It should be hard to break and easy to maintain." Carefully, I mentally retracted the blade and turned the safety back on. I made a mental note not to forget to turn that safety on as well. "I had wanted to perform an update to your eye, but there were some concerns about the odd intelligence chip you have installed. I didn't wish to endanger you." "Thanks." "I'm sorry for going through this so fast, but you had a visitor who said it was important."
"About time, Doc." Flair walked into the hospital without his armor and looking like he desperately needed a shower after being cooped up inside it for so long. "You look good, Hyde. Okay, you look better than you did. You've never looked good."
At least Flair was honest.
"Serenity's up, and I think she has something to tell you."
"Serenity!"
I leapt from the bed without a second thought, and the impact on the ground to my newly installed limb caused jolts of pain to run through me.
"Where?"
I ignored the pain. It didn't matter. Nothing else mattered.
"I'll show you," Flair said, stifling a chuckle. "You're so predictable. This way, I'll show you to her room."
There were many questions I'd normally be asking, like, how long was I out? Where was all my stuff? Why wasn't Flair in armor anymore? But who cared about that shit? My daughter needed me, so I had to go to her. Flair showed me through a series of odd-smelling halls before he reached the room where Serenity was. I found myself nervous for some reason and hesitated going in. She had saved my life back in the tunnels without a doubt, and I had almost gotten her killed by bringing her with me. Of course, the other options hadn't been much better, but there was that pang of guilt I always got. I should have been a better mother to her, but I didn't know how. I steeled my resolve and moved to go through the door, but again I faltered. What if she wanted to leave, stay with Platinum Hayes at the orphanage? That'd be a good thing, right? Except she couldn't know that that was no longer a possibility. If that was what this was about, how could I disappoint her?
"Just talk to her,"
a familiar voice said in my head, and I instantly felt silly. I couldn't have a pretend discussion about something when I had a real one to attend to. Worrying about things she hadn't said yet wasn't going to get me anywhere but one step closer to death by anxiety, so I just opened the door.
"Mama!"
came the shrill cry as soon as my head stuck through the door. Before I could respond, the little filly had wrapped her hooves around my neck. It seemed like forever since I had seen her without that black fireproof outfit on. She had been wearing it the entire time she was passed out.
"Mama, look!"
I did. Well, I had been anyway. I was admiring how clean she managed to keep her pink coat despite everything. But when she said "look," I knew what she meant. There on her coat was what she had been waiting for.
"Isn't it awesome? It's just so perfect. Look, see?"
For being sick, she sure was hyper.
"It is awesome, sweetie. It fits you so well," I said in a soft tone as I admired her cutie mark.
It was a much better one than mine. Hers actually made sense. It occurred to me that she must have gotten it back in the tunnels when she saved my life and made me a leg on the spot. It made sense, but with everything that was happening, I hadn't thought to take her outfit off to check. On her flank was the picture of a heart. The left half was a bright pink, enough to stand out against her pale coat, while the other half was comprised of three yellow gears and a snake and yellow wire on a gray frame.
Level up. Companion perk. Emergency mechanics. Serenity now has a plus 30 chance to complete mechanics checks and an extra plus 15 when the check has to do with cybernetics.